I'm sure I'm not the only one, and having seen a great fireworks display and wondering, how in the heck did they do that? It's really, really amazing what they can do with fireworks today. Larry Mueller here. Great to have you along today on the Ideas Network. Science is an endlessly fascinating topic, and we're lucky to have Bassam Shakashiri with us today to talk about the opportunities and the challenges of science. He's a professor of chemistry at the UW-Madison, past president of the American Chemical Society. Going to talk with us about fireworks and a whole lot more. Bassam, always great to have you with us. Thanks for coming by.
Very happy to be with you again, Larry. I always enjoy my visits with you and with the listening audience. It's not a surprise to you that I share with you once again how often, how frequently people come up to me and say, I've heard you on the Larry Mueller Show.
Well, I tell you what, you do a wonderful job. And in fact, give a great lecture, or it's not really a lecture. I hate to say lecture. Sometimes lecture can have a negative connotation to some people.
Well, you know, I'll tell you, to me, I agree with you. To me, the lecture idea is a very old idea. It has served us in education a great deal. But to me, the main purpose of a lecture is to convey the attitude of the presenter about the subject matter that they are lecturing about. So, so I don't know where you're going with that, but we are going to have a presentation on July the 4th, Independence Day, at the Memorial Union Terrace. Mike LaCrone and the band will be there. My colleague Rodney Schreiner and I will again be sharing the joy of science along with music from the UW band. You know, Mike, he's just fabulous in what he does. And so it's going to be fun, and it's going to be the evening of Independence Day. Our part of the program starts at 8:15 p.m., and lasts still for about an hour, and it'll be a mixture of science experiments and music, and we'll try to share with the audience at the Union Terrace some of the intricate aspects of fireworks. We're not going to set off any fireworks. You know, you need a license to set off fireworks, and when we enjoy fireworks, we should appreciate how carefully choreographed they are, how well they're put together safely by experts, by professionals.
Yeah.
Fireworks are to be enjoyed, but they're not to be done by us. And I say this repeatedly every time I visit with you, Larry, about this, because it's important for us to appreciate the beauty of the light and the sound that we hear when these explosions take place up in the air. And we wonder how this comes about. So safety is paramount.
It definitely is. And I want to give our listeners a chance to join in. By the way, I haven't given the phone number yet, so let me do that right now. Bassam Shakashiri, our guest, as we talk with him about the science of fireworks and some current issues in science and technology, give us a call at 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at talk@wpr.org or post on my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. We'd certainly love to hear from you. How are the what is the science behind fireworks?
Well, you know, fireworks release three very noticeable forms of energy. Of course, a tremendous release of sound, which is what we hear, bright light, and heat. We usually don't feel the heat because we're far away from where the fireworks are set off. The tremendous booms that we hear at ground level, they're the result of a very rapid release of energy into the air. In fact, the energy is released faster than it can be dissipated. That's why we hear the boom. It causes the air to expand faster than the speed of sound. And this is what produces a shockwave or a sonic boom. The colors, though, the beautiful, captivating colors that we see are produced by heating metal salts such as calcium chloride or sodium nitrate or even some table salt. They emit characteristic colors of the various elements that are in there. The atoms in these elements absorb energy and they get excited into a higher energy state. And then when the electrons in the atoms fall back to the ground state, to mm-hmm. the original state, then they release these beautiful colors. So each element has its own signature. So lithium, for example, produces a beautiful red color. Barium produces a green color. So does copper, but different shades of green are produced by copper and by barium. Lithium salts as well as strontium salts produce that nice red color. Orange is produced by calcium salts. Yellow is produced by table salts. And blue, we like the blue.
Mm-hmm.
That's copper salts along with chlorine producer. And so these are some of the technical aspects of it. But putting those together, Larry, is really an art.
Oh, it's got to be.
And it's done very, very well by professionals. And you have to get the firework up in the air before the short fuse then is lit to explode and form different stars and different formations. It's just breathtaking to watch them.
And, you know, there is some growing concern about the environmental impact of some of the big, huge, you know, firework displays. Is there a lot of damage? Or maybe I should put it this way. What damage is done?
Fireworks contains some elements that are oxidizers, especially perchlorates. Perchlorates have been shown to be having a negative environmental effect. And so perchlorate salts that are used in fireworks, when a firework explodes and, you know, the rest of the material cascades down, it's really in small amounts,
mm-hmm.
but we always have to be careful of any small amount that we put into the environment. So there is always that danger of exposure. That's why we don't sit under the fireworks. We sit away from them and watch them from a distance. And the people who set them off often step back.
Yeah.
But the environmental impact is something that all of us should be concerned about.
Are there alternatives to those materials? Or?
There is research that's done to produce oxidizers that would not use perchlorates, and mm-hmm. some have been tried. Again, I go back to saying, you know, this is a combination of the science of explosives with the artistic display that one wants, and so there are actually fireworks that are produced that are environmentally friendly, mm-hmm. but as you can imagine, Larry, they're a bit more costly. So
yep.
so that's another factor that we have to keep in mind.
Bassam Shakashiri, our guest today. If you'd like to join in, the number to call 1-800-642-1234. Give us a call or go to my Facebook page at the Larry Mueller Show. You can post a question or a comment there. And Luba in Madison has been waiting a bit, so let's go there. Luba, thank you for calling. Hi.
Okay, thank you. I had a very unusual experience. I was on the bus, and it was a rainy period. It was around 4 o'clock in the afternoon, and the rain had stopped, and all of a sudden the atmosphere was very quiet and very still. Nothing moved. And there was a street sign that was not completed. It was put in, but the street indication was not attached to it. And the top of the pole was moving back and forth. And there's kind of a glow to it. And I'm not loony, because the passenger in back of me said, "Look." And I should have talked to the passenger, but I didn't. And I watched it, and then the bus moved on. Could you explain that?
I'm not sure how to explain it. My guess is that some electrical storm contributed to capturing the energy in that. Was it a metallic?
Yes, it's a black painted, a street sign. It was new, and it has a cap on it, but it was near a development that never occurred.
Oh,
and they didn't apply the street sign to it, the top. And it just that top
was glowing.
Glowing and moving sort of back and forth, and it was just absolutely fascinating.
Oh, man.
And since there was no lightning, I couldn't see any anyway, and no thundering, and the atmosphere was absolutely still,
Well, you know, the truth is the weather guys are better answering this question than I am, because the only thing I can think of is a result of an electrical storm that may have caused the metallic object to get the electricity in it. How long did that last, do you know?
I don't know, because I just moved on, you know, on the bus. But it was such an unusual experience that there wasn't any lightning nearby that I could tell. And I just wasn't sure.
We're going to have to ask Steve and John about that.
In fact, I will ask them, and I will post the what they share with me on the website. You know, after every appearance I make with you, Larry, we put a summary on my website, scifun.org, scifun.org. And I will, this is very interesting and intriguing. So you got me interested in it. Thank you.
Thank you very much for calling. And we will, believe me, Bassam will follow up on that. And I hope you go to his site and take a look at the answer, because he'll have that probably in a couple days, I bet. We had a Facebook question from Stephanie, who said, I went to see the Bratfest fireworks this year, and I was surprised to see a large mushroom-like cloud of flame coming up from the ground. At first, I thought it was an accident, but the show kept going on, so it seemed to be part of the show. My friend said that he has seen this at other shows and that it was safe and just a part of the show. Could you comment on perhaps that part of the fireworks show? So it was essentially a mushroom-shaped ball of flame.
And I'm not sure how high it was.
That would be good to know.
It could be that something that was about to set off and was set off but did not function properly, and it was a low-level detonation that released energy in the form of the mushroom cloud. I haven't seen that.
No,
and so,
I haven't seen it either.
Yeah. So, but it's you know, it's interesting to me, Larry, that both callers are sharing observations that they made.
Yes.
And looking for explanations. And that's one of the fascinating things about people, whether they're interested in science or not, is that they make observations and they seek explanations and they seek an understanding of phenomena that they encounter. And this really relates to something that I care very deeply about, that is the communication of science to the public at large. And one of the questions that I have, excuse me, allergy season in Madison again. One of the questions that I have for people in the listening audience, do you feel that scientists are communicating science to you? What is it that you'd like to hear from scientists such as myself and others in public forums, via radio, on television, via the internet? What kinds of things do you feel we can be doing better than what we have been doing? People comment all the time about my website and other websites and so on, and we're very happy to hear from them about that. But I'm really curious to hear from the listening audience, what would they like the conversations to be about, and how can we be more successful in communicating the values of scientific discoveries to the public at large? There is no single public. We know that. It would be very, very helpful to me and to my colleagues in science if we could hear from you on the show today or via email or any other way that you care.
Bassam Shakashiri, our guest today, professor of chemistry at the UW-Madison, talking with him about the science of fireworks and current issues in science and society. You can join in at 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org. I'm Larry Mueller. Judith Sears-Poisson, our producer on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Great to have you along on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Larry Mueller here with my guest Bassam Shakashiri, talking science. Zeroed in a little bit on the science of fireworks, but of course we're taking other science-related questions as well. And I would like to go to Bob in Union Grove. Bob, thank you very much for calling in, and what's on your mind? Bob, are you there?
Yep.
Oh, hi, what's on your mind?
I'm concerned. I've been a school teacher for about 30 years, and I continue to see our high school girls coming into high school competitive, interested, doing fine in the field of science and in the field of math. And then by the time they're juniors, for sure by the time they're seniors, they're significantly behind the boys, both in terms of their performance and in terms of their interest. And I was wondering if your people are doing any work on this issue. I mean, it's been a long time issue, and it's nothing new I'm pointing out, but it is something that continues, and I and a lot of educators are concerned about it.
This is a very serious problem that we continue to work on. We, I mean, in the educational and scientific communities. In fact, this is a problem for all of society. The problem of increasing the participation of talented individuals, girls and boys, in pursuing careers in science, indeed careers in teaching science. Youngsters have a flame of interest, and what we have to do, both as parents and as teachers and as responsible members of the community, we have to work hard not to extinguish that flame of interest. We do it in school. We do it at home. There have been many studies, Bob, that show that more girls now are going into science than before. Other studies also show that when they get to college, the college population, for example, now is the majority is female rather than male.
Mm-hmm.
And they are in scientific careers that relate to mathematics, to engineering, technology, and many more are going to graduate school. But after that, there are still serious issues in terms of how women are perceived as professionals in science, in medicine, in pharmacy, and how they perform in the workforce and how they are rewarded. There are studies that show that there is discrepancies in the compensation between males and females. So this is a general societal problem, but I think in science we're making some good headway to not only attract youngsters to pursue careers in science, but to retain them and to keep them interested in becoming scientists and making contributions to advance knowledge and to share that advancement via teaching or public engagement with everyone else. So you put your finger on something that's very, very critical, Bob. And I would say in this regard, the issue is not only in terms of what happens in the school. The issue relates to what also happens at home. So parental involvement is very crucial to the development of the individual, and science is all around us. Science doesn't happen only Monday, Wednesday, Friday at 11 o'clock in the classroom. So the attitudes that the parents have, the grandparents, the families, the guardians have toward learning science are very, very important. So this is a big, big societal problem.
It definitely is. I'm just thinking about my own daughter, our own daughter, Emily, who's 10. This summer, we purchased a book of science projects before the summer started, and she's working. We work with her a little bit, but she also has a sitter with her, a person with her all day long, and their job is to kind of a fun job to do these experiments
and make
these things. Yeah,
together. I think doing science experiments together is very, very important. And you know, on my website, I want to mention it one more time. We have, if you go to scifund.org, scifun.org, in the upper left corner, You can click on experiments you can do at home. These are safe experiments. They're fun experiments. They're educational experiments. They should be done not by one person, but by everyone in the family.
And Judith just reminded me that John Munson was in for Kathleen on June 16th, and they talked about exactly that was the topic about girls in STEM, science, technology, and engineering, and math. And you can listen to that archived at WPR.org. So it was from Monday, June 16th. So Bob and others, if you're interested, Judith produced that program, by the way. That is a nice hour-long conversation about girls in STEM. So I thank you very much for that comment. And certainly something that Sam's been working on pretty much his whole career. Melissa in Eau Claire. Oops. You know what? I pushed the wrong button. So we're going to go to Terry and Abrams first. Terry, hello.
Hello. How are you? And good morning. I really am encouraged by what you're talking about here, trying to raise the level of participation of youth in the sciences and the general community. Just a couple of comments. I'm a 63-year-old person. I work in a nuclear pharmacy. And the majority of my colleagues there, they're talking a language that I don't understand. Most of the time, I'm just going in and doing my job, mostly the delivery part of it. But I think when you use the word involved, engaged, I would add participation. And participation can just be a very, very brief moment when you're doing, you know, science or the introduction. I can think of two things when I was a child. One, when the magnets came out and they were handed to me, and they say, well, try to pull these two magnets apart. And, you know, sometimes if the stronger the magnet, the more difficult it was. But when they put those magnets open, they scattered apart. You know, how can the same objects do two different things at the same time? Another participation, when I was flying with my younger brother, was a pilot over Baraboo, and he put the plane into a dive and then pulled it up and then pushed the stick forward, and the handful of coins on the dash of the plane and the logbook began to float in midair. Witnessness. And so, you know, two things like that, the aha moment or cool moment, you know, very brief, but it was participation. That's sometimes what gets people, youth or all people, interested in something they want to explore. You know, how did that happen? Why did that happen? And from there they'll search out, you know, maybe a career in that endeavor, that area. So,
Very good comments.
Very good comments, Terry. I agree with you about participation. That's the whole purpose of engagement, is to engage the people. Not only the one person, but the people that you're having a conversation with, and to participate fully in making observations, trying to come up with explanations, recognizing that it's not always easy to come up with an explanation, learn how to deal with frustration when we don't get an answer, try to express ourselves in ways that convey what is it that we're seeing, what is it that we want to try to answer. This whole arena of involvement, engagement, participation is crucial to the development of every human being, not only youngsters, but adults as well. And so doing things together, as you were giving examples of, is important. And that's why I emphasize that parental involvement of everyone in the family in all kinds of activities, not only science activities. It could be other recreational activities. It could be listening to music or watching a show together or going to a museum or going to the zoo or going to the botanical garden. All kinds of activities that bring people together and help them make cerebral connections. Make connections, mental connections, as well as emotional connections as far as the experiences that they're going through. That's really crucial.
And again, thank you, Terry, for calling. I want to give, we have so many people online, I want to give some others a chance to get in here. Melissa in Eau Claire up next. Melissa, hi, thank you for calling.
Hi, thank you so much. I just had a comment about the mushroom explosion that happened at a fireworks event. I'm from Eau Claire, and we go to the fireworks every year. And that is also, it's a part of our show. It's, I could explain it as maybe like on a movie and you see a car blow up. It's probably, you know, comparable to that size, like okay. a little mini atomic bomb. But it is part of the show, and it's, you know, it's fun for the kids to see this, you know, big, huge, we call them fireballs, coming out at us. And the heat, we sit rather close to the fireworks, and you can actually feel the heat from these explosions. So it's pretty neat, and I just had to comment about that.
Oh, all right. Thank you so much. So the fireball is part of the act.
And how, Melissa, are you still on?
Yes.
So how was it set off, do you know?
I'm not exactly sure how it's set off. You'd have to, you know, you have to be kind of in the vicinity to actually see it. You know, it's,
yeah.
you know, maybe 20 feet tall, but it's quite a little fun sight to see.
Yeah.
Thank you, Melissa.
Thank you very much, Melissa. Appreciate it. Brian in Winona, Minnesota, your turn. Hi, thank you for calling.
Hey there. Hi. My name is Brian, and I'm a civil engineering student at the University of Wisconsin-Platteville, so shout out to them. And so just a comment regarding what you were talking about earlier. Are scientists communicating to the, you know, to the masses effectively?
Yes.
And my, you know, growing up as a millennial, my experience has been that, yes, science is more and more becoming intertwined in our culture. And I think that's especially evident now that have you ever seen Neil deGrasse Tyson's Cosmos?
His Cosmos show.
Very good show. Do you watch it?
Oh, I love it.
Yeah.
It's probably my favorite show.
What do you like about it? What do you love about it?
I think it's hard to pick one because there's just so much. I especially like him condensing the Earth's age into a calendar. Really puts this perspective on things. But I guess my comment being that you get more and more people like myself interested and intrigued in science if you're making it a part of the popular culture, you know, that we're growing up in.
Very good, Brian. Let me ask you a question, if I may, Brian. So
yes.
how might you go about sharing what you enjoy about Cosmos and other aspects of science with people in your immediate community? Do you feel that you
You know, I think definitely just, you know, making it an easy option to watch on a Sunday night, you know, as opposed to, you know, watching a movie. Like, and, you know, a few of my friends were like, you know, like, we're hanging out on a Sunday night. We don't know what to do. I'm like, hey, there's a really awesome show on. And, you know, we start watching, and they're like, all of a sudden they become interested in it because you're putting science and you're putting it in a context that, or reviewing it in another paradigm that, you know, you haven't viewed it in before. And Neil deGrasse Tyson and, you know, him with Brian Greene and a few other astrophysicists definitely make it a lot more reachable for the upcoming generations.
Yeah.
Very good, Brian. Very good. I want to encourage you to talk about the show with others and discuss some aspects of it as well. This is a very good show. This incarnation, of course, is inspired by Carl Sagan, who did
yes.
the original Cosmos. And of course, the audiences today are a bit different than they mm-hmm. were, you know, 30 years ago.
Yeah.
But it's very important for those of us who enjoy these kinds of presentations to also do something beyond watching them, to talk about them, get other people engaged. So thank you, Brian.
Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate it. Good luck with your continued studies as well. Nick in Green Bay, it's your turn. Hi, Nick.
Hey, thanks for taking my call. I've got a 4-year-old son and a 5-year-old daughter. We were watching a science show, and it really broke my heart because I asked her what she wanted to be, and I said, "Do you want to be a scientist?" She's like, "Yeah, I'd like to be a scientist, but I can't." I said, "Why is that?" And she said, "Because I'm a girl." And that just broke my heart, but we're into science big time. Like, we'll have a bonfire at night, and she'll be like, "Dad, let's go look and see what animals we can see at night." I just push her as much as I can into science because I'm a ham operator and stuff, so I love science.
No.
Well, you know, Nick, she broke your heart, and if I hear that, it'll break my heart too. But that's really an alert to us to become more engaging in terms of not only the label of being a scientist. That can come later. Be engaging in nurturing the curiosity that youngsters have. and helping them to express themselves, to ask questions, to realize that some of the answers are available, some of the answers are not available. Why is the sky blue? Why is it that when a wind blows on a body of water, we see what we call white caps? And is the color of those white caps related to the color of the stuff that floats up in the sky? Why do the leaves change color in the fall? We all have all kinds of questions, and let us not hold anyone permanently to one statement they make. If she does not want to become a scientist later on after being exposed to science, that's perfectly fine. Not everyone wants to become a scientist, but for those people who want to nurture their curiosity, they need us as adults to guide them, to take them to places where they can express themselves, to do some hands-on experiments, whether you get them from my website or any other source. Do them safely. Do things that promote learning, that promote the development of the child, the development of the adult with the child. We all learn as we do things together. So, Nick, my plea to you is to work with your daughter and with others, with her, some of her friends, and do some fun things, some real fun things. And if you can help her make the connection that some of these things are science and some may not be science or engineering, that'll come later. So don't worry about the label too much right now.
And you can get some help from Bassam's website. He's got some pretty cool science experiments right there at scifund.org. Thank you again, Nick, for calling. We had a nice comment from Jody on Facebook. If it weren't for the Science Friday program, it's 1 to 3 every Friday here on the Ideas Network, I wouldn't know much about what's happening in the science field. I really look forward to this program to hear the topics that are covered. They do a great job of presenting the material in an understandable and entertaining way. I always learn a lot.
Ira Flato, the host of Science Fridays, is a wonderful science communicator. He does a fantastic job interviewing people on very difficult and deep subjects and making that available to the public at large, to the listening audiences around the country, is a tremendous service. I enjoy listening to all the guests that he has on, and I admit to you, I don't always know exactly in great detail what each guest is talking about, but it gets me thinking. It gets me thinking about the creativity of the human mind and how they do this research and how they trying to communicate the results of this research to the rest of us, and how perhaps in the future some of the research that they're talking about will benefit humankind.
Yeah. Jean and Ashlyn, thank you for calling. Hi.
Hi. I say for all the money that families spend on fireworks, they could be buying instead telescopes, microscopes, and books on science. Especially, I would ask your guest to make a comment on the series and experiments of Nikola Tesla. There are books on it.
If it weren't for Nikola Tesla, we would not have electricity as we have it now. He was a fabulous scientist. He was not well understood at the time, but all of his discoveries and inventions contributed greatly to what we enjoy now. And that's an area that relates to the history of science and to the appreciation of what our forebears have done in this area, in all areas. So your comment about the choices that we have in terms of how we spend our time, how we spend our money, what kind of books, what kind of shows we go to, whether or not we spend money to get fireworks, to watch fireworks, or that's a very, very important comment that you make, Gene. It is part of our individuality to make those choices, but it is also incumbent upon us to help each other make choices that are satisfying and that are rewarding and have a long-term impact. Mm-hmm. So appreciating a fireworks show might result in people wanting to know more about not only the science of fireworks, but about the science of vision. And why is it that the human brain is affected by the brightness of the colors and the sounds that affect us? And so someone might be inspired to become a neuroscientist, for example. But you're absolutely right about reading books and engaging ourselves in what can contribute to our development. That is really crucial.
Thank you, Gene. Mark in River Falls, thank you for calling. Hello.
Hi. Hey, you know, you asked the question earlier about what was one of the things or some of the things that can engage people in science. And I remember back in the 60s and 70s, of course, we had the National Space Program. And that really did a wonderful job of pushing science down into the young children, all the way to the dreaming of going to the stars, that type of thing. And I think that we need to have that type of attitude on big issues that are concerning our Earth now. Environmental issues, obviously, would be hugely benefited by that type of an attitude or program to be launched at a national level. But and promoted, obviously, by all scientists out there, much like the Society of Concerned Scientists for the Environment is doing now. It's just one of those things that really drove science down to, you know, third graders even.
Very good comments, Mark. I appreciate what you said. Let me just make my own observation about this. I think there are two groups in society that science and science communication relate to. The first group are the people who are going to become scientists. They're already interested. They read Scientific American. They may be younger than that. They haven't started reading Scientific American, but they have an inclination to go into science. That is something that the U.S. government, right after Sputnik in the late 1950s, did something about. What I submit to you and everyone else in the listening audience, that the bigger challenge that we have is to communicate science and the values of science to everyone else, not only to the people who are going to become scientists. We want to take care of the people who are going to become scientists. There's no question about that. But we want to have the public at large appreciate science and learn something about the value of science in our society. So I make a distinction between science literacy and expertise in science.
Mm-hmm.
So the scientist is an expert, but science literacy is the appreciation of science without a deep understanding of chemistry, physics, or biology. And that's a big challenge to the scientist. We still don't know how to do that as well as it should be done.
And Bassam, on that note, I thank you so much for being with us today. I know that I want to remind people that you're going to be at the Memorial Union on the UW-Madison campus on the 4th of July at 8:15 in the evening, along with Mike LaCrone and the UW band. You're going to be doing some great experiments and talking about how fireworks work.
And we're going to celebrate Independence Day at the Union Terrace.
Bassam Shakashiri, our guest. I hope you'll go to his website as well, scifund.org. He's got lots of great information about science, and he always publishes some material relating to the program when he's been on the program, and I'm sure he'll have some again this time around as well. Always fun, and fun talking about the 4th of July, isn't it?